Chapter 35. Bloodfather. Once they realise they're not getting anything from us, Kaji leaves to report back to my bloodfather while the twins push me into the bath. The water is hot, and I shiver with pleasure as I step in, letting it envelop me. I'm normally a person who likes to be squeezed, but there is something uniform about the way a tub of hot water holds you, like a warm hug from someone you love. I breathe deeply as I lean back, inviting it to soak in. No sooner do I close my eyes than I hear Rojva reach around the privacy screen to steal my clothes. Annoying, but it ain't surprising. The once fine breeches, shirt, and coat Aunt Leisha's tailor has made for me are torn, worn, and filthy. Court folk always do this. Olive and Selim were no better. Seeing you in worn clothes makes royals itch in all their silk and frippery, especially when you've got a famous da. Where are you going with those? I call, already knowing the answer. They smell like a dead animal, Rojva says. I'll give them to the servants to wash. There's a click of the door, and I can smell the serving woman waiting outside. The cloaks are to be treated as holy raiment, Rojva whispers. Burn the rest. Your will, the woman replies, and I hear the door click closed again. I can hear you, I say loudly. Again, that musical laugh. I've seen the cleaning women work miracles, cousin, but they are not the creator himself. No amount of scrubbing will make those rags worthy to clean your feet, Darren Asuparchin. You and Princess Selin should be clad in raiments of royalty, not beggar's robes. No doubt she searched the clothes on the way, but there's nothing to find. I love the twins like cousins, but ain't such a fool that I trust them. I put everything of value, including Mam's knife, in the satchel with my pipes before undressing, and that rests beside me on the edge of the tub. Rojva steps away into the wardrobe chamber, and I hear the whisking hiss of silk sliding against silk. I've worked up a lather a few moments later when she returns, coming around the screen, bold as a hound. She laughs her tinkling laugh as I splash and scramble to cover myself. You needn't be ashamed, cousin. I have a brother, after all. Aye, that's enough of that. Selin comes around the screen as well, but she keeps her back to me, blocking Rojva's line of sight. She smells protective. Fine, Rojva huffs, averting her gaze as she holds out a neatly folded pile of clothes. Most able-bodied Krasian men are Sharum caste and wear black robes. Some few are Dharma and wear white. The weaklings, Kafit, wear tan like children. I have not had Hanupash, the Krasian coming-of-age trial that determines caste. In the eyes of people of the Evesian faith, I am still a child. By custom, I should be dressed in tan robes, if of fine quality. But the rules are different for the children of Krasia's rulers. Princes and princesses, before the trial, wear colours so bright they hurt my eyes. Rojva holds out a pumpkin orange silk robe with white wardwork stitched along the breast, hem and sleeves. Bright blue silk pants with legs wide enough to fit my entire body into, tapering down to narrow cuffs. Thin orange silk slippers with pointed toes. If clothes could shout, these would be screaming. I'm not wearing that, I say. Do not complain to me, Rojva says. They are Arik's robes.
From when I was 12,
Arik notes.
Well, he certainly won't fit what you're wearing now, Rojva says,
as if Arik's bright motley robes would be preferable. I'm not wearing that, I say again.
I don't blame you, Arik agrees. Better a bido than a woman's pillow silks.
Ain't walking around in just a nappy either, I growl. Get me something else or tell my bloodfather I cannot meet him because you had the servants burn my clothes.
Rojva half turns her head my way, a smile pulling at her lips.
You're welcome to go through Arik's wardrobe yourself, Darren Asu Arlan, but I assure you all his clothes are like this.
Welcome to my personal abyss, Arik says.
Let's see.
Selim pulls Rosha back around the screen, and I hear them in the wardrobe rummaging about. They don't speak. Both of them know I can hear anything they say.
Still ain't gonna like it, Selim says when they return.
But at least you'll be all one colour instead of looking like a rainbow sickup.
Why didn't you tell them why we've come?
Selim asks that evening, when Eric and Rosha finally take their leave.
Thought you said the twins were family.
You tell all your secrets to your brothers? I ask.
Selim scratches her neck.
My fair point.
Eric and Rojva are a family, I say. But they're not going to lie to their grandparents. Anything we told them has already been passed on to Jardir and Inevera.
Even now there are servants in the walls, listening in.
Selim sits up.
Why, really?
I raise my voice. They ain't as quiet as they think.
I hear some fumbling in the walls at that, and chuckle to myself. Selim moves from her chair to the divan where I sit, scooching me to the side with her hips to sit next to me and lean close to whisper.
Still, doesn't answer the question. And we're here to ask for help.
I tell her. And when I see my blood father, we'll tell him everything.
Hollow and Crazier might have peace, but they ain't exactly friends, and this ain't some show for palace gossip. Less people know what happened, the better.
I hear the sound of crutches in the hall, and cross the room, opening the door before the man on the other side has a chance to knock. He's a familiar sight, a man in brightly coloured robes and turban. Just visible at the hems is a bit of silk underclothing in kafit tan. He's adorned with rings and necklaces and earrings. Gold glitters in his mouth, where some teeth are missing. Even standing still, he needs the support of two crutches, carved in the shape of camelbacks, with armpit cushions between the humps.
Son of Arlen, welcome to Crazier, the man calls.
Arben, I'm genuinely happy to see my father's old friend. Arben may call me Son of Arlen, but he's the only one of Da's friends who sees me for who I am, instead of looking for something of Da in me. Every time Mam and I visited over the years, Arben would greet me with gifts and stories of my father. Not as the deliverer, but before all that, when he was just a young, reckless messenger. I love Arben, but he's Bloodfather's spy too. Perhaps him most of all.
By Everam, it is good to see you, Son of Arlen.
Arben bows as deep as his crutches will allow.
I trust you and your family are well.
Funny you should ask that, I say, changing the topic before he can probe further.
It seems a certain Crazian merchant owes us a horse.
Arben is surprisingly graceful on his crutches as he takes a step back and puts a hand on his heart.
Surely you cannot mean to suggest that merchant is me. I have ever been your father's true friend, and never cheated him or left my debts unpaid.
Never succeeded in cheating him, you mean, I say. Arben spreads his hands, smiling.
All is fair at the haggling table, my friend. Your father always understood that.
I nod. But it seems he left a horse in your keeping the night he was cast out of Crazier and left to die on the sands.
I had nothing to do with that,
Arben says. But yes, he left his courser, Nighteye, in my keeping.
When the Parcheen did not return, we thought him dead, and with no one to claim the animal, it became mine by right of possession.
But he wasn't dead, I say.
It was years before I learned that,
Arben notes. I shrug. Horses live a long time.
I don't have it anymore,
Arben says. I'll accept a replacement, I say. And not some pack animal, a sturdy messenger horse. I can smell the mix of emotions at war in the man. He wants to haggle, relishes the idea, in fact. But there is guilt in his scent as well. He knows I'm right, and that it is the least he can do. At last, Arben holds up his hands.
Who am I to argue with the son of the Parcheen? The debt will be repaid before you leave.
Selim crosses the room, and Arben bows again.
Everarm's blessings upon you, your royal highness.
Selen Vargarid arm cutter arm hollow. I know your father well, and judged him a fair and honourable man. If there is anything that can be done to make your first visit to Krasia more comfortable, Princess, do not hesitate to ask.
Arvin escorts us from our chambers to court, talking all the while. He moves easily on his crutches, keeping something close to what most folks would think a comfortable pace. To me, it feels like we're wading through molasses, but I keep my manners and match him. The Kafit merchant keeps his chatter amiable, but again and again his probing questions come uncomfortably close to topics I want to discuss with him least of all.
White-sleeved guards open the doors to a throne room empty save for my bloodfather, Ahman Jardir, the Shah Dharmaka, and his first wife, Dharmajah Inevera. They bar Arban from entering, closing the doors behind Selen and me. I hate the throne room. I have to blink and squint, lifting a hand to blot out the worst of it as I try to adjust. Shining gold, sparkling jewels, vivid silk tapestries, mosaics of semi-precious stone and windows of stained glass make it like looking in a kaleidoscope even without ward sight. Add in the magic and it's like standing in the centre of a festival flamework display. It's more than I can process, hurting my eyes and making me feel sick and dizzy. The skull throne stands atop a dais of seven steps, a seat built from the heads of Krasia's ancient leaders, topped with the severed head of a mind demon. The bones are coated in priceless magic-conductive electrum. The seat throbs with power, mixing faith protections with raw core magic. Anyone sitting on it would radiate strength like a god. Across its arms lies the spear of Khaji, the strongest weapon ever made. It throbs with power like something alive. Next to it, on the top of the dais, is the pillow throne, a canopied bed of silk cushions that shines with almost as much magic as the skull throne itself. There are other magics about the room. Wardwork that seems decorative provides powerful protections, as do the ever-present hero's bones. Wards of silence surround us, much as in Aunt Leisha's office, but none of the room's raw power matches what radiates from the couple who wait for us at the base of the steps. Ahman Jardir doesn't dress fancy. Just simple warrior blacks, beneath an outer robe and turban of stark white. He's tall as a cutter, thick with muscle, but no cutter keeps their beards so impeccably trimmed and oiled. My bloodfather has close to 60 summers, but like many who use magic, he remains physically in his prime. I wonder if that's my fate, too, still looking like I have 30 summers on my 100th born day. But while his clothes are plain, the crown atop my bloodfather's head is not. 7 points of shining electrum rise from his turban, each affixed with a different gemstone the size of a chestnut. The gems catch the lamplight, splitting it into a full spectrum of colour, even as the crown's magic does the same in ward sight. Like my mam's, Bloodfather's skin is warded. Hers are inked into her flesh, but his are raised scars, painstakingly cut. They pump magic through him like a pulse. Beside him is Inevera, his Jiwa Ka, or first wife. The Damaja can steal the breath from anyone, the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Her purple head wrap and veil are transparent, showing every twist of her full lips and delicate nose. Her long black hair is oiled and bound in gold, and her gossamer purple robes are just opaque enough for decency in layers. They flow around her like smoke, leading the eye to search fruitlessly for gaps in coverage that always seem just a slight draft away. She is older than my bloodfather, but ageless like him. The wand at the Damaja's belt is as powerful as Aunt Leisha's, and her many rings, bracelets, necklaces, earrings, and headpiece all shine with demon bone magic, glittering about her like stars. Darin, Jardir's voice is warm as he holds his arms open. Bloodfather, I embrace him gratefully, feeling safe for the first time in months.
The sensation makes me choke, and it's only sheer force of will that keeps me from weeping into his shoulder. Suddenly, I am so tired. I ease back before I lose what remains of my dignity. Jardir lets me go, turning to give Selen a shallow bow. Welcome, Selen Var Garid Arm Cutter Arm Hollow. Your father is one of the greatest warriors I have ever met. I am honored to call him friend. He will no doubt be overjoyed to hear you are well. Selen hesitates at the mention of her father, but recovers, dipping into a curtsy. You honor me, Shah Dharmakar. The Damaja sweeps forward, her diaphanous robes swirling around her as if they have a life of their own. Welcome, Darin Asu Arlen Ambales Ambrook, the light born in darkness. She nods at me, and I suppress a shudder as I return the gesture. I've always been uneasy around the Damaja. Something hungry about her. And I feel like the meal. And to you, Selen Var Elona. Enevra continues. Your father's strength is legend, but your mother is no less formidable. Aye, that's honest word. Selen curtsies, but she, too, smells wary. And just me, Enevra, unnerves. It has been too long since you and your mother last visited, Jardir says. It is good to see you grown into a man. Standing before him in silk robes of cobalt blue, embroidered with wardwork in silver thread and pants that taper wide as a ball gown, I hardly feel like a grown man. Aye, maybe not quite there yet. A man is more than his stature, Jardir says. Your father was never the largest warrior, nor the strongest. His Sharusak was not the best, nor was he the quickest, or the smartest. But again and again death came for the Parcheen, and again he cast it back. I was honored to be his Ajin Pal, his brother, in day and night. He lays his hands on my shoulders the way Grandad does when he's got something heavy to say. I know I am not your true sire, Darin Bales, but if ever you need a boon so great that only a son might ask it of his father, you may ask it of me. Lands, titles, riches, matchmakers and dower to find you wives to give you children, all this I owe the son of Arlen and Morbeside. Don't need any land or riches, I tell Jardir. My bloodfather nods. And yet here you are, arriving on my doorstep, unannounced and on foot, dressed in rags, alone save for the daughter of Garrod. Don't tell me you think we're here to elope too, I say. It was Rosra's guess, but as good as any, Enevra says. You had opportunity with your mothers away hunting the demons that attacked the princesses on solstice. Without so much as consulting me. Jardir's fist clenches at his side, and I catch a whiff of his anger before he suppresses it. Dice didn't tell you. I try to keep bitterness from my tone, but ain't sure I succeed. Wouldn't be in this fix if not for the ripping dice. All the coarse-born things do is turn lives upside down. The dice have ever been elusive, where you were concerned, Darin Bales. Something about Enevra's words make me profoundly uneasy. At least, without your blood to focus the casting. The Damaja's face is serene, her breathing deep and even. She does a good job of masking her natural scent in perfume, making it hard to sniff out what she's feeling. Even her aura is placid. But her eyes and easy grace are predatory. She will ask for that blood when she hears our tale. Mum always said the blood was all Enevra really cared about, and I should never give her any. But coarseborn me. This time I ain't got much choice. Enough games. Jardir's voice deepens, like Mam getting ready to drag me from a puddle.
If it is not to marry the daughter of Garrett, why are you here?
Demons didn't just attack Olive and Selen on Solstice, I say. Hit me and Brooke too.
On the same night?
Shorter asks. Same hour, I say.
Tsst! Enevra hisses. How could they not inform us of such a portent?
Mam wanted to, but Aunt Leisha wasn't comfortable reaching out. My eyes flick to the Demaja. But she says nothing. They cast the dice and think they found some kind of nest. Again, Bloodfather's aura turns briefly stormy, then blows away. I can smell his fear and concern, even if his words try to hide them.
Nevertheless, I am certain they are well. Leisha Paper is even more formidable than her mother, and Renar Arm Bales put a spear in a demon queen's eye.
Thought so too, till we found this. I reach into my robe, producing Mam's knife.
Tsst!
Enevra hisses. Shardir's eyes widen, and this time when his aura turns stormy, it does not calm. Where did you find that?
In a field of blood and burning bodies, I say. Hundreds of wooden soldiers and warded children. No sign of survivors. Looked like they were bushwhacked.
I have never seen my blood father angry, but he is angry now. He lifts an arm, and the spear of Kaji flies from the dais to his hand. The wards along its length burn him with power.
When?
Shardir demands.
2 moons ago,
I say. Enevra lays a hand on Jardir's wrist, just above the hand that holds the spear.
Peace, husband. If it has been so long, we must learn all we can before taking action.
Jardir grimaces, but he nods, breathing away his fear and anger as I relate the attack near my granddad's farm, and Selen retells what happened on the Borough Tor. Their faces are calm, but even the Demaja's aura begins to boil at having been kept in the dark about the danger to Olive and me.
Aunt Leisha's bones pointed to a city in the eastern mountains, I say. She left with 500 Hollow Lancers, Mam, and all awarded children.
Such a force should have been a match for any demon ambush, Shardir says.
The prophecy, Enevra presses. Do you recall Leisha Va'alona's precise words?
Enevra turns to me, and I shift uncomfortably. Even Mam never trusted Demaja fully. But we need help, and they're the only ones who can give it to us. A mimic demon hungers beneath a city in an eastern mountain valley, I say. She showed us an area that was once part of the country of Rusk. I can mark it on a map.
Immediately, Shardir says.
But still, that does not explain why you, Darin Asu Arlen, Armbales Armbrook, are here in Krasia. I will not ask a third time.
Olive is missing too, Selen says. We think she was kidnapped the night after Leisha and Mrs. Bales left Hollow.
Kidnapped?
Shardir asks.
By whom?
We don't know for sure, but I have a suspicion, Selen says.
It happened not long after your wife tried to buy Olive.
Shardir turns to Enevra. But the Demaja is aghast.
I did no such thing.
Your other wife, Selen says.
Belina. Both eyes snap back to Selen.
Belina was in Hollow?
Enevra's voice is low and dangerous. This time, it is her aura that will not calm.
Belina and Aravan came to negotiate joining the Pact of Free Cities, Selen said.
Wanted to seal the deal with a wedding. Olive and Prince Chad?
Chardan Asu Marok, Enevra advises. Aleverak's great-grandson. Barely out of swaddling when the Maja returned to Desert Spear.
She snorts in derision.
Belina came with a purse full of sand and tried to bargain for the sun.
Leisha saw it that way too, Selen says. Shut it down so hard they left town the next day.
They could have left spies behind,
Shardir says. I shake my head.
Whoever took Olive was Krasian, but I don't think they were Maja. Everyone gives me the look of confusion I've seen so many times. I smelled it in Lord Arthur's room, where we found Olive's note. Krasian's. Thought it was Mika at the time, but it was too spread out, and there were male scents. Selen looks at me. You can smell what country folk are from? Country, I huff. I can smell what part of town they're from. You can smell tribe? Shardir asks. Aye, I say. Ain't hard. Northerners might think all your food's alike, but each tribe has its differences, and it changes how they smell. Never smelled Marja before they came to Hollow, but they were just leaving when we arrived and their scent was all over the keep. Spice mixed with a dust that just smelled dead. Desert dust, Jardir says. I nod. Whoever kidnapped Olive didn't smell like that. Spies use Alamon powder to hide their scents, Inevra says. Something clicks into place. That dust that deadened the scents in Arthur's office. Now that I have a name for it, I can filter it in the future. Still, I shake my head. Powder didn't hide as much as they think. Whoever they were, they didn't smell like Marja. Watchers, then, Shadir says. Not the Kravak, surely. It would have to be the Nanji. Their tribe served the Marja for centuries. The blood debts run deep. Again, I relate everything I can recall, as my bloodfather listens impassively. You did the right thing coming to me, Darin, he says at last. He turns to Selen. As for you, Selen Var Garad, it is time we called your father.